problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.
Our demands are very reasonable. By ignoring them, you're selling out these children's futures.
Oh, come on, Edna. We both know these children have no future. Prove me wrong, kids. Prove me wrong.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
This is Pete Holmes. I'm a comedian. I'm with my boy, Will. You're listening to the Homemade Broadcast, because you're smart.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Base vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The soundtrack, kindly produce a sound. Go on. Don't be nervous. Go ahead. Any sound? Well, that isn't quite what I had in mind.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio on Radio St. Pete. My name is Will Kuntz, your host. For now and forever, my friends, so happy to be with you again. How are you? You good? You grand? You great? I'm all right. I'm good. I won a cruise. I won a cruise. It's kind of weird, though, because I got this little scratch-off thing from the car dealership in the mail, and I came home on a Friday. I was a little bored, and they said, if you scratch this thing and it matches this other thing, hey, guess what? You won a prize. So I said, okay, I'm going to do that. And wouldn't you know, I happened to win. I matched the numbers. So I didn't have anything to do. I went down to this dealership and said, hey, I think I won something. And it was like a flat screen, an Xbox, an iPad, and cash prizes, all these things. And, of course, I won one of the really generic prizes to get you through the door, which was the spin the wheel. And the big prize on there was $50, which I will gladly take, not a problem. So I spin the thing, it goes around and around and around, and I hit a free cruise. And I was like, oh, cool, knowing that nothing's free. And I feel bad because they were like, oh my God, you just won a cruise. And I was like, oh, nice. And I think my lack of enthusiasm might have threw them off a little bit or something. I think they were, like, kind of taken aback. But they were like, yeah, man, it's legit. All you got to do is pay your taxes. And I was like, oh, okay, here we go. And then you look at the back of the thing, and you could take two people, and the port fees, the port taxes, are $198 a person. So it's not a free cruise, and I knew it. Bastards. So, no, I didn't win a free cruise. I have the voucher, though, if anybody wants it. But I know that you can take this cruise for, like, $70 if you just go on Carnival.com. They run specials all the time. My boss took one. It was, like, $75 for 3 days to go down to the Bahamas. So I'm not paying $200. Sorry, it was kind of, I guess, a pointless, boring story. But this podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar. Check out the open mic. HMB Radio stand-up comedy open mic every second and fourth Tuesday of the month. Slybar.com, 2061 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg. They got food now. They got good beers. We're running specials now. I think we had $2 Miller Lights last time for the open mic. So check that out and keep up with the open mic at Facebook.com Facebook.com/HMB Radio. We got all the comedy events on there. And Truvy Salon and Spa. My good friend Chrissy Parker down there does good work. Up for Best of the Bay. Hairdresser lady. You can find her at 8908 4th Street North. Phone number 727-329-9751. Make an appointment with her. TruvySalonAndSpa.com. Go get your nails did. Go get your hair did. Look good. I need to get a trim. And eventually we're going to do that. I'm going to make Chrissy do it at some point. So make sure you check out new shows that are on Radio St. Pete, including the City Hall broadcast, we're calling that. It's an informal look at your local government here in St. Petersburg, Florida. You got the Mr. Mayor Rick Kreisman, you got Ben Kirby, and Kevin King. We released the first one on the 1st. You can find it in the Radio St. Pete archive, and you can also find it on hmbradio.com. We're going to release that Thursdays. It's going to be twice a month program that we're going to do, so be on the lookout for that. I'm very honored that they chose me to do that. I don't really know why. If you're a listener to this show, you'll probably understand why I'm saying that, because I have no idea what I'm doing. You learn by doing, folks. That's a fact. Make sure you vote this. I know I just talked it up really great, but make sure you vote for the Homemade Broadcast for Best Podcast and Best Local Net Show for the CL Best of the Bay deal that they do. It would be nice to take that home and spoil Ryan Hoppe's winning streak. He'll probably win it again, though. He runs a good show down there. So we also got a new jazz show coming up on Sunday nights here on Radio St. Pete. Sunday night, yes, what time? 7 to 10 Eastern. We'll be broadcasting from the Music Room in Dunedin. It's following this show here. So I think actually the first one will be on right after this show ends. Frank. I should read these emails beforehand. Frank Rivera will be doing the Sunday night jazz show for us, 7 to 10. And then following that is the Indie Circuit, heard right here on Radio St. Pete. And you can find all those shows in the archive. You know, take some time. Enjoy some jazz. People love jazz. I couldn't get into it. Maybe when I'm older, I don't know, I'll fall into it. So yes, check out those programs. Sorry, I'm kind of rushing through this because my guest is a little early. I don't want to make them wait anymore. So Jared Waters is joining me today. He's a local comedian. He's a teacher. Seems to be a really sweet man. So I'm excited to talk to him. So let's just bring him in and get to the chatting. Jared Waters. Thank you for being patient. I'm sorry you had to listen to that probably outside instead.
No problem, man.
Did you get a good, are we Snapchatting right now?
Snapchatting for all your
fans.
What's
up, Snapchat? This is Will Koontz.
Yes.
HMBradio.com. I'm here with Jared Waters.
There you go.
Is the time up yet?
Dipset.
Nailed it. Man, I nailed that Snapchat.
You know how to do a drop. I'm proud of you, man.
I'm really a big fan of the Snapchat. I just got into it. I thought it was for, like, little kids.
I like the Michael Jordan.
You like that? I got made fun of really bad for that one. It was one of those free CVS prints that you get. You get the free 8x10s. And I was like, I got to do it.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
Jared.
Yes, sir.
I got you in the nick of time.
I just
learned literally an hour ago that you are out of here.
Yes. I'm moving to New York, Harlem, New York, August 10th. But I'm going to be driving through the states and stopping where I can. Stopping in Atlanta and then stopping eventually states, and I should be up there the middle of August.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, don't curse. You don't seem like a cursing guy, though.
Yeah, I don't curse.
Do you even curse in your act?
Nope.
Good for you, man.
Never.
No crutches. No crutches.
No crutches. I don't, you know, some people, you know, they curse at all. I don't believe in cursing, you know what I mean? Because I'm around kids all the time. I don't curse. I just never curse in my daily life. I couldn't swear in my house, so I just don't swear outside.
I swear awful. I curse constantly, but when I have this microphone here and I'm sitting in this chair, I've gotten really good.
So why do you curse? Because you're upset?
It's just vernacular. It just makes words, phrases, I feel like, more impactful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can see that.
Do you just throw an F word in there just before you say something? It really drives the point across.
What the, I used to say EFF, and that's not for the F word. It's just, I guess I've always, in the Netherlands, they always say F. There's like a thing. When I was growing up, everyone was just like F, 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 the F.
Substituting the F word?
It's not even substituting the F word. That's what, like, when I first started, people were like, stop saying the word F. Because they're thinking of the F word. I was like, that's just how I speak, man. I'm not saying the F word at all. I don't think anyone, I've never cursed at all on a stage before. That's from since the beginning, never. Just made a point not to curse at all. Even though I do talk about some dirty stuff and everything else. But I just feel like cursing is not in my vocabulary.
And you are your day job. You teach kindergarten.
Kindergarten, yes.
So that's an interesting dynamic. Have you ever had a incident happen where you ran into a parent and you were doing comedy?
Yes. Recently, this year was like the year that all the parents found out I started doing stand-up. One of the students' grandmas, she came in. She said she went to a comedy. She said her girlfriend went to a comedy show. And she's like, we just saw this bearded black guy. And he said he's a kindergarten teacher. Waiter? Waffle? And she goes, Waters? She goes, yeah, that's my granddaughter's kindergarten teacher.
Oh, no.
She goes, what? She's like, well, let's just pull him up online. So this lady, grandma, come in. She goes, you improv-ing today? Improv-ing tonight? I was like, no, I'm not in the improv troupe. And I didn't understand. And then we did the Wicked Witches show, and we started promoting the shows. And I guess we promoted it on Facebook. And someone's like, some lady walked up. Mr. Waters, you're like, you popped up on my Facebook feed for like a show. I was like, oh, that's crazy. And then one of my students walked up to me. She's like, I saw you singing in church. And I was like, what church do you go to? I was like, you didn't go to my church. I know everybody in my church. You weren't there. She goes, no, it was on my phone, my dad's phone.
Oh, no.
And I was like, your dad's phone? She goes, yeah, you had a hat on, and you were singing into a microphone, and everyone was laughing. And I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, at the birthday party. All my parents, there's like a big parent, so they all pass it around. So then they start asking me, so then they just start showing up.
So it was a positive.
Yeah, it's a positive. I don't really.
Do you try to hide it? I mean, it seems like there are kind of different things, different aspects of life that you might want to try to keep separate, just because of maybe material that you talk about. Or,
right. I didn't really hide it. I just really didn't. It was just hard to find me, unless you really knew me in the scene.
Right.
You know what I mean? If you do like, oh, wow, because when I had the job, I don't really talk that much. They're like, he's really quiet. So when they hear about it, most of the people don't believe it because it's like he barely says anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they see like, oh, wow, he just did a Star Wars play. Oh, my God. All these kids keep saying how funny Mr. Waters is, but he doesn't say anything. So eventually they're just like, okay, now we see it. All right, now we're getting it. Now we'll start doing it like that. So like eventually, like this year, I was just like, F it. You know what I mean? I'm starting making everything public. I had a profile picture, everything else. Because I didn't like the parents finding me.
Yeah, I noticed that you're Waters Jared on Facebook. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I hope I didn't just blow your cover.
No, that's not a cover. I just did that water. I did that like a long time ago because there's so many Jared Waters. So I was like, Waters Jared. So if you know this Waters Jared, you'll find me.
Do you have a profile picture now?
Yeah, I have a profile picture, everything. Yeah.
Hey.
But I never had a profile picture since college. I was like, if somebody wants to find me, they'll find me.
Yeah.
But then they're like, we can't book you because we don't know if it's you. And I was like, oh, yeah, maybe I should start adding a profile picture.
So with this new you're leaving.
Yeah.
So, I mean, are you giving up teaching? Is that kind of going
to
be?
I'll go to another school or teach inside New York. I just got to go do some more applications. So I told my boss like a couple weeks ago, and she was just devastated. A lot of them were devastated. And I pretty much, she's like, like over 100 people are signed up for your classroom. Like all these parents are requesting to be in your class and everything else. Everyone's banking on you being there. And I was like, yeah. So, like, I went in there and I told her, I was like, you know what, this is, because she didn't know I did stand-up. Everyone else in the school, I found it, they all knew about it. But they're just like, yeah, Waters is stand-up. It's all online. So they think it's just online. I was like, that's just the PG stuff online. That's not even a sample of what I do. But me and this dude got in an argument about a comedy show in downtown Ybor City. He got upset with one of my jokes I did. So he kept writing me, and he kept writing me online. He kept writing all the comedy clubs, like, don't book them, everything else. So then he, like, Googled my school, and then he found the school and was writing the school and writing the school and everything else. So my principal said, can you come in? And she came in. She goes, Waters, what does this guy mean you're at a comedy club? What are you doing down there? You hanging out? What's going on? I was like, yeah, I was just out there. She goes, he said he saw you on stage. What were you doing on stage, helping somebody or anything else? I was like, no, I was up there telling stand-up. She's like, you what? You're a stand-up? What do you mean? You tell comedy? Like, you tell jokes? She's like, I knew you were funny, but I didn't. She's like, and then it just popped in her head, and she goes, now it all makes sense. And she goes, like, where do you do shows every night? And she's like, do you do this every night? I was like, yeah, every night. She goes, even before school. I was like, yeah, every time. She goes, and you're just alive at school. You're never tired, anything else. I was like, yeah. And she was like, so mind blown. She's like, how late are you out at night? I was like, I'm out pretty late. He's like, and you're back at school? Yeah, never been late, never everything else, and I'm there. You just got to be awake of like kindergarten. It's like one time I used to doze off, and one like little girl's like, wake up, Mr. Russell. Oh, God, all right. All right, let's stand up and do some exercises.
So what happened with the person that was right in the school? I mean, was there any repercussions from that?
No, man, F him. I mean, it's just like...
That's frightening, though, that people were able to do that. It's too easy.
It's too easy to access people, but I didn't really give an F anyways. We were talking about transgenders, and I made a point. He didn't like the point, but he's a transgender woman,
mm-hmm.
but he's married to a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife agreed with everything I had to say, and he just ends up... He pushes his wife.
Whoa.
Because he's upset because you didn't have my back out there and everything else, and you shouldn't be around kids. I was like, for having a perspective? My thing is like, just think. You're not thinking. It's like, you're just mad because of what it seems like. I was like, but I'm talking about something else. So he's upset. He's putting his hand in my face. I was like, all right, man, just don't put your hand in my face. We can keep everything copacetic. So he writes to school, but my thing is, at my school, I'm the man there. So right. No one cares. You can say anything negative, and it's not going to work. I had a parent say something negative, and it couldn't work because I was like, I got all the other parents on my back, so it just ostracized you.
Mm-hmm.
We think Waters is too tough. I was like, well, we think he's great. We think he pushes our kids. Maybe your kid can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always just pretty much like stand-up. First stand-up, 10 minutes, just getting the crowd on your side, especially if they don't know you. Then after that, once they're on your side, you can take them wherever you want. So once I get the parents on my side, and everyone gets on my side, and even the parents iffy about it, they'll talk to the former parents, and they'll be all like, no, Waters is great. No, you got to know. Just let him do his thing. And after that, it's like building up a reputation, and they're good with it. So anything he could have said, I punched somebody in the street. But they're just like, all right, whatever. It had to be a misunderstanding because we love Waters here.
Well, that's good that you have that relationship with them because now it's so easy just to, we'll just let you go. It's easier than having all these complaints file in. People get fired now every day.
They do, but
it's crazy.
But my thing is, it's about character. You know what I mean? They know the character of the person I am. They know I'll never endanger anybody. And they know, even when I talk at the job, it's like, it's all about an opinion. Are you going to penalize me for having an opinion?
Yeah, like, give me a lot of people will.
Yeah, I wasn't malicious. All my jokes are never malicious. Well, now they're starting to get malicious, but it's never malicious at first. It's just like, if it gets malicious, I just want you to see the point, and then we'll see the other side of the point. So he eventually did what he had to do, and nobody really cared. It was like, for him, he thought he did something, and I was like, dude, it don't matter.
What was the joke? What did you say?
This is a joke about the North Carolina law. And the North Carolina law, I was like, I support some parts of the bill, and I'm against some parts of the bill. And I was like, I sort of understand what North Carolina is trying to do. I get transgender people want to use the bathroom. You paid a lot of money to let God know he made a mistake. I get that, right? He paid a lot of money for it. I said, but I don't think the law is about you guys. I think the law is about protecting women from creepy guys.
Yeah,
I was like, because guys are freaking creepy.
Yeah, they can be.
Right?
Certainly.
And I was like, I love Katy Perry. I love those grapefruit breasts that she has. I love that about Katy Perry. And if there's a chance I could see her breasts legally in the bathroom and not get arrested, I'm taking that deal. And she can get mad at me like, get out of here. You're not a girl. This is a girl's bathroom. I was like, but I feel like one.
Yeah, how dare you? Yeah, you can't tell.
His wife busts out laughing. His wife goes, I was raped in the bathroom. I understand that she's from India, and she's telling me all this dark stuff about it. She's like, I really appreciate what you said. I was like, I know it's not supporting. I was like, I'm just trying to look at a different angle before just saying that they're being mean to these people. I was like, I get you guys want to use the bathroom. I get it. I was like, you paid a lot of money. I was like, I get that. I was like, but just try to look at the other side for a minute. And his wife goes, I really understand. So he just shuts his wife up, and he's like, shut up, da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, all right, man, I'm not going to waste my freaking Tuesday talking to you freaking losers about this.
So this is a common thing that happens now, which is there's extremes
right.
on either side. And it seems like the middle ground is not really explored anymore. You can't even talk about this. You're either use the Trump thing that's been so,
right.
you know, whatever. But if you're with him, you're a racist and you're a bigot. It's like, well, wait a minute. You know, there's some things that he said that. You know, kind of agree with.
Some people, I think there's points to take off both sides. You know what I mean?
Sure, it's like absolutely.
You can say what you want about Hillary. You can say what you want about Trump. There's good parts about everybody. And my thing is just trying to find the good parts about it. My thing, beefing with me, and I'm not even a named comic right now. What do you care about my opinion for?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you going to do off that? You're not a vigilante. You're
because
not doing...
it's not their opinion. And right. their opinion is right.
Right. But everyone has an opinion. But my thing is... I think is this is just like, okay, we get you got opinion. I get that, everything else. But it's just like, we got freedom of speech here. Some stuff you say can be wrong, can be malicious. But if you come at it from a fun and light point of view, I was like, people will accept it. Mm-hmm. I was like, I had 70 people laughing and one person not laughing. Okay, I'll take those odds.
Yeah, that's really good.
I'll take that.
You killed it, man.
Yeah, I'll take the odds. But
how can you expect to please everybody in a room? It's impossible.
I mean, sometimes we get guilty of doing that. Sometimes you see like one person not laughing and you'll start catering your jokes towards them.
And just focus on them.
And I was just like, F it, man. I hear more laughs over there. Just walk around. Walk around. Don't notice it. Some people just don't want to laugh. Mm-hmm. But then after the show, like, dude, that was so funny. I was internally laughing. I said, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for internally laughing. I felt it. So now it's just like sometimes we're all really just iffy on stage. Like, oh, man, I want to break him. I was like, yeah, why sacrifice the whole lamb, the whole herd, when you could just leave that one out there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if he strays away, let him stray away. It's like, I'm not Jesus. Jesus has sacrificed everything for one lamb. I was like, yeah, that's him. We're supposed to strive to be like him. But in comedy, I'm not going to care about this lamb. He could be slaughtered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If that was, if it makes sense a little bit.
It did. I got you.
All my stuff is more biblical reference. All my comedy comes from biblical references.
So how did you get into comedy? When did you start?
I was doing stuff about comedy, like writing sketches and writing just funny things and skits in college and stuff like that. I was doing that. But 2010 is when I started like officially doing stand-up. And then 2012, I didn't do it at all because I got a job at Disney World and I worked every day at night, so I had no time to do it. So all I think I did, I took that whole year, and I was just reading, writing, and just studying other comics the whole time. I think I only got up maybe twice. And they had a club back in the day called Taste, like an open mic Taste on Tuesday nights. And
that's where
I
met some.
I don't know what it. No, it was a restaurant. I think it was a restaurant. And I would go there when I finally got off work, but I would get off so late, I could only get up there, and they would finally let me on. This dude named Matt, he just recently passed away, but he was in Orlando, him and Larry. They ran a room, and they're just like, hey, man, come. So that was the only time I got up there. So that whole 2012 year was just me just studying. And that's when I realized, like, comedy. I realized that I was a hack. I realized that I sucked at this, and everything I did in college didn't matter anymore because I was just catering to young people.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, when you start out young, you're with a college crowd, you're really talking about sex all the time. You're really talking about girls. You're talking about, you know, stuff on campus or making fun of people on campus. And I looked at the video, and I was like, dude, I can't do none of these jokes anymore.
Right.
Because nobody knows about these football players. Nobody knows about that. And I didn't notice it, but I was like, I was a hack. And someone had to tell me that. And I had to realize that. And I was like, oh, wow, thanks for somebody telling me. I remember I went up to New York when I was really young. And my friend was from Brooklyn. I think his sister was either sleeping with a comic. I don't know how. But no one, like, I was the only one on the show that had no credits at all. Everyone was Comedy Central. Everything else, and I got up there, you got to go off first because we don't know who you are. So he introduced me. I didn't know he introduced me because he was saying all these credits, and I didn't have any of this. This dude said college is shutting it down. This guy's selling out colleges. Like, who the F is this guy talking about? I was like, is this a drop-in or something? Jared Waters. And I was like, what the f-? So I go up there, and as I'm telling the jokes, the guys that have been doing it for like 15 years, they were telling the punchlines before it hit. I bet he's going this way with it. Oh, we called it up. Mm-hmm. Then a girl went up. She killed, and everyone killed. And I was, like, really down about it. I was like, dang, man, I freaking suck. Like, this isn't. And then they came up there, and they're like, dude, listen, man, you just got to quit, man. This isn't for you, man. I know you're young right now, but this is over.
Whoa.
You should just take a knife and just take your liver out and do it. They're just effing with me. But you go to sports, everyone just effs with you because they always effing with you like that. I was like, dude, I don't even know why you're doing it. I was like, dude, you've been doing it 20 years, and I've accomplished more than you have.
Yeah.
He's like, well, so you're in the same show as me. And they're like, oh. I'm like, all right, dude, come tomorrow and see what you can do tomorrow. So last night I switched up the set, and I was like, I took all their advice and did everything else. Then the next night I did well. And he goes, look, kid, when you go back to North Carolina, that's when I went to college, start hosting. Nobody wants to host, so everything you got to do, host, 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 and get more stage time. But they never told me to do it at open mics. I just thought you had to host random events. So there'd be like fashion shows, and I'm up there trying to tell jokes at fashion shows or step shows or whatever, because we didn't have like a comedy scene in Greenville, North Carolina. And they did have a comedy scene, but at the time I thought they all sucked. So I was like, I'm not going to associate myself with these guys.
Wait, so did you start in Greenville or Orlando?
Greenville, North Carolina.
Okay, so then you came down to Orlando for school?
I went to college, East Carolina University in North Carolina. That's where I went to college there.
Did you always want to be a teacher?
No, I took a scholarship when I was in the Netherlands. That's where I grew up, inside the Netherlands. Took a scholarship. The scholarship gave me a couple $1,000, and it was a teaching scholarship. And I was like, F it, I'll just do whatever I want when I get to college. I was like, no, you better do what we gave you the money to do. And I never wanted kindergarten. I was just like, I'm just going to do K through 6. And my mother always told me, because I was like, I don't want to go to college. She goes, just have something to fall back on. You know, just go to college, do something. Just teach. You can teach anywhere. You can always get a job teaching. I was like, all right. So I did kindergarten one time for an internship and just bombed bad. It was so horrible. Like, the kids were running around. They weren't listening to me, everything else. And then the teacher had the nerve to write and say, she goes, hey, what he taught my kids were not right about. Because this freaking racist. They gave me black history. I was like, I just got to this country. How the frick are you going to give me a black history lesson to do about, like, shoot, about some? They picked me a random person to do. So I'm teaching all these kids. So I brought all these sneakers. And they're like, oh, I didn't. They're like, you should go purchase stuff. I was like, I'm not even spending my money to purchase stuff. So I bought, like, old raggedy sneakers. Like, this guy made the sole of a shoe, and all the kids were like, oh, wow, ew, look at the shoes, like, running around. But now I know, like, kindergarten, you have to establish your trust first before you teach them anything. But it was just horrible, bombed. And the teacher, like, she wrote, like, a horrible letter, and I wrote back, and I just realized, I was like, you know what? I was like, F this. I didn't say F it. I was just like, you know what? I really think it's encouraging for demeaning me as a kindergarten teacher, only being the man here. I really felt it was great to do that to me. You gave me a lot of motivation. And, like, all these teachers wrote back, we are sorry. Oh, my God, it's such a rare thing. Everyone has a bad time. You should try it again. Next time, try a higher grade. So then I did fifth grade. I did fifth grade. It was pretty cool. But I just didn't like the fact, like, people were talking to me like we were peers. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm not going to argue with an 11-year-old about what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And I was, like, dealing with parents. And I realized, like, with fifth graders, like, parents are liars. They're all freaking liars. Their kids are liars. And you're going to believe that liar because you've been knowing this liar for 12 years of your life.
And you love that liar.
Thank you. So it was like that. So I was like, fifth grade was all right. But the mentor I had was really good, and she got pregnant at the time. So she set it up in my internship for me to take over the classroom. So everything was set up for me to teach in North Carolina, to do this and do that. And then I was talking to my friend. He goes, dude, there's an internship at Disney. You should try it out. Because my family would always come to vacations. I met this comedian, like we talked about, Dean Napolitano. And this dude did 2 hours of jokes in front of 12 people and destroyed the room.
Oh.
Because his middle act just tanked. And everyone started getting up, leaving. Because it was like you know those dinner things where they have like mystery movies or mystery thing? Mm-hmm. It was like that. So everyone after the show would come for a comedy show. And my dad was like, let's stay for the comedy show. You do comedy. Come on, let's stay. Let's see, it'll be fun. So he did like 2.5 hours, and he barely cursed for that. So like he was effing with my family and everything else. And then he talks to my dad, and he goes, what do you do? And he's made fun of my dad, because my dad's name's Esau. He goes, what are you, a biblical person? And then he like named off all. He's like, wow, this whole Bible family, everyone has biblical names. He goes, well, what does your son Jared do? He goes, he's a comedian too. He's trying to be one. He goes, what? And he goes, talk to me after the show. Then after the show, we talk for like maybe 20 minutes. He gives me his email address and tells him, email me if you have any questions. And I was like, all right, let's see what happens. And I emailed him. He shot me email right back. He was telling me how to do stuff, everything else. Then I was just like, in college, I was like, if you got to be funny, you got to go to Orlando. That's where all the funny people are. That's what I thought. They're in Florida. Mm-hmm. So if I get to Florida, that's what I'm going to do, get to Florida, because that's where the funny people are. Because I went to New York when I was young, and I was like, I wasn't ready for that. So I said, maybe I go down to the South, establish some time, and go down there. Because I wasn't growing in North Carolina at all as a comic. It was just like I was frustrated there. So then when I got to Orlando, he wasn't even there because he's a traveling comic. So he was there. So then my family, then people moved to Tampa. So then when I finished the internship, I went to the Tampa scene. And that's when I really started. I was around a comedy club and I understood what adults laughed at and adult humor. And that is pretty much like rebroken down and redo everything else.
Mm-hmm. How old are you now?
I'm 27 now.
Oh, okay. So yeah. You're a complete human being now. I say this all the time.
Yeah, man, yeah.
26, all your synapses and your brain form. You can explore other realms. You are who you are pretty much. You hopefully get better. But you're a person at this point. And that's important, I think, for comics. There is some. Cam, for instance.
Cam Bertrand,
young man, 22. But he's a killer already.
Yes.
but very few can do that. You know what I noticed, too, is the comics who think they stink are usually the good ones. The ones who think they're hot and, killed this room, they're usually the terrible ones.
I was listening to Colin Quinn said, if you ever get off stage and you felt like everything went well, you sucked that night.
That's a bad sign.
Bad sign. I always listen. I was like, dang. Even when I thought I killed a room, I was like, dang, I could have did this better. I sped up too fast. I did everything else. And I just know I bring something different. You know what I mean? So I have a unique delivery, a unique everything else. I know I bring something different. And I'm just a student of it. You know what I mean? Like, I realize that's why I tell all the younger guys, I'm like, it's like right now, it's like, someone told me, and I wish someone told me sooner what I was doing wrong. So it's hard telling a person what he's doing wrong when you're getting 300 people at a show and you're doing 35 minutes and you think it's great. Like, I thought when I was like 22, I was like, this is it. This is killer stuff. I sent my videos to Chris Rock. I was like, what the F was I thinking? Now as a man, I'm just like, he's looking at like, this freaking hack had the nerve.
Yeah.
And I told him, hey, if you ever need a writer, man, I'm open.
I'm not doing anything.
I'm available and everything else. Then I was like, man. And then after like 2 years, I started to get more perspective. Then I was like, I listened to the album that changed my perspective about comedy was Patrice O'Neill's Mr. P.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites.
That album, when I listened to that, I realized that everything I was saying was just anyone could tell these jokes, and I needed to say something and mean what I say and have people have an emotion about it. I was like, what's the whole point? Anyone can just tell jokes. Anyone can take a joke because it's just a joke. I said, but if you have your own opinion and your own comparisons, I was like, this is what I need to do.
So telling the truth is important and making the truth funny.
The truth, even not the truth, even if you're just trying.
Your truth.
Yeah, it's the truth, but it's just like enlightening somebody about something. Like most of the stuff, I'm more of a research person. I find things interesting, what I find interesting. And I was like, how can I bring this topic that hasn't been touched and make it funny?
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, this personal stuff. Then I was like, how can I talk about a subject that's really, really difficult and spin it so people understand my point? Because when I was in Orlando, I lived with this gay dude, and we didn't agree on a lot of stuff. But he made me realize something. He was just like, I grew up in a church, too. You can't back everything up with Bible stuff. Just because you're Christian don't mean you can. I was like, you're right. And after I sat down, I was like, all right, I have to find a new perspective how to connect with a crowd. A lot of my stuff is like comes from there, and I was like, all right, if people don't believe in the Bible, there has to be another way to connect with people. And I was like, all right, so me and my roommate, we would just always go back and forth, and I was like, well, what do you think about this? He goes, all right, that's a good point. But he didn't know I was doing stand-up on him. I was just breaking his brain down and breaking everything else. And my other roommate at the time, because Disney, you have six roommates. It was like a big, it was just turned into a big, like, it was just happened to be a good bachelor pack because we're all boys. But one dude, he goes, you do stand-up? Because I was about to get fired at Disney. I was like 3 weeks in, I almost got fired. They put me in like Disney jail. That's what they call it. When you first apply, they ask you what jobs don't you want to do. And when you get in trouble, they give you the jobs you don't want to do. So
right,
you quit.
Right.
So if you're a fat dude, they put you in food so you can steal a fry and they fire you and stuff like that. Disney has its own thing, man. They like, even the Chinese people that come work for Disney, their name would be like a Chinese name. And then when they come, they give them like an American name. It's like, all right, your name is Hung Kwa. Now you're Candace. Kid you not. You go to Disney World, and they're like, what? Candace? I was like, where'd you? He's like, my real name is this, but they just give him a name. So my roommate goes, you like Patrice O'Neill? I was like, yeah, we watched Elephant. And I was like, yeah, I like Patrice O'Neill. He goes, dude, you got to listen to the Mr. P CD. It just came out. I was like, what? He goes, dude, you got to listen to it. We downloaded it. I didn't buy it, but he downloaded it. I put it in, and I was like, dang. And we all sat inside the house, and we just listened to it. Then I put it on my iPod, and I listened to it again. I was like, dang.
I'm so thankful that it's taken way too soon. Obviously, Elephant in a Room is one of my favorite specials, probably my favorite special of all time. But thank God that all these old Opie and Anthony appearances are all on YouTube.
Right.
There's hours and hours and hours and hours.
I just wish you would have put out more material, man. Yeah. Put out more content. And it was it was like the group I was in, East Carolina, is called Seriously Clowning. It was like a whole group of comics that they came together, and then since we'd have open mics, every Tuesday night we'd meet up, and we'd always throw jokes at each other and start writing. And some of them were, they weren't really that good, but I was like, when I got in, I was like, look, man, I could bring a crowd, you know what I mean? Because I did a lot of stuff on campus. Like, I'll bring a crowd. We just got to be funny. So I'll bring like maybe 300 people, and now the reason I get the crowd because I just say we're giving away PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3s, we're giving away iPods, everything else. And we didn't give away
just
anything. Yeah. And I was just like, when I hyped up everybody, I was like false advertising. This guy's from Saturday Night Live. Like, what, people from SNL are coming? And I was like, this dude's from Hootie and the Afghan Blowfish. What, Hootie and the Afghan Blowfish? So I was like, and people are like, dude, you got to stop building up our names. It's like, we just got to put on a good show.
Right.
That's it.
Yep.
So some of them would tank because it was like, I just, at the time, I knew a lot of black people because I was on campus and I just worked, you know. So I would bring them to the crowd. And then when we started doing it, what I appreciated from them, even though some of their humor I didn't get, they were comedy nerds and I didn't have that yet. Because when I got to this country, I thought, this is what black people do in this country to be funny. Instead of me embracing where I was from and embracing how different I was like, I got to be these people. This is what I got to talk about because they're on TV, they're funny, and this is what I have to do. So all my
but
jokes
you didn't have those experiences, right? I mean, you had a different.
I mean, everyone, but everyone had the experience of chasing girls or making fun of somebody, everything else. I got to make fun of somebody.
But that's not just a black experience. I mean, that's just in
but
general.
It was more like a deaf. It was like a. It was just some. It was some. My jokes is about like. It's not like it's not a. Not saying it's a black experience, but it's more of a. I was like doing just stuff that would never be accepted in a comedy club.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying black comics are not accepted in a comedy club. I'm saying just like. I thought Def Jam was how I was supposed to get in. Because there's a whole bunch of funny black comics, and they do everything else. It's public service, and now we're not downgrading black comedy at all. But I'm saying that Def Comedy Jam, that's all I watched when I was 18. And when I was studying, I was like, these are the people on TV, because everyone kept saying Def Jam's the best type of comedy. And then when I watched Chris Rock up there, I was like, man, Chris Rock doesn't seem like he's into this at all when he did Def Jam. And then I was like, everyone, because I was like, oh, Jamie Foxx is a comic. Jamie Foxx did Def Jam. Oh, man, Bernie Mac. Oh, Bernie Mac did Def Jam. So every time I would Google all these comedians, they all had Def Jam sets, so I would go watch those. So then I came out, and I was like, I had to come out tough. I had to come out doing like that. I had to have music. And then being around the other comics, they're like, dude, do you watch Bill Burr? Do you watch this? I was like, who? It's like, yeah, do you watch? Oh, I was like, the dude from Chappelle's Show? Yeah. Everything's, dude, there's more comics. And they introduced me to Patrice O'Neal. So I was like being around them, like, dude, you gotta listen to this. So it was like good for us to get things out of each other. And then,
were you trying to be a black comic, or were just a comic in general?
I knew I was funny, but I didn't know I was a shock comic. I was saying things to shock people, and then get them on the side. It was still funny premises to this day. I mean, I wouldn't say it was just like funny premises about getting girls or making fun of people on campus or anything else. But my thing was
looking. Back at it.
One time I saw in the crowd, I invited one of my professors to come. And she was just like, oh my goodness, Waters, you said a lot of stuff that I didn't get. I didn't get anything. Chasing girls, picking a girl out of your apartment or everything else. And I was like, oh wow, I didn't think about it like that. And after she said that to me, I was like, how can I be a comic if I don't relate to everyone?
That's really hard to do though, because you only have your own perspective. You only have your own experience.
Chris Rock relates to everyone. He's a comic. I mean, that's what I'm
talking
about.
So funny is funny in general.
Right. If you're a stand-up comic, it don't matter what crowd you get inside of it, you're a stand-up comic. Mm-hmm. I was like catering myself off to these particular people on campus and talking about what they could relate to, but other people on campus aren't relating to it. So I was like, I have to write jokes everyone can relate to.
So it's not everyone, though. It's a lot of people. Because not everybody's got some people like Bo Burnham. I don't really get Bo Burnham. I can't do it, but he's very successful. It's right. Not my cup of tea. So it's not everyone. It's impossible.
I'm sure Bo Burnham could walk in a room with a whole bunch of people that never heard him and make them laugh before.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm saying the majority of people, right?
Right, but my thing is like international jokes, meaning that it don't matter. I was like at the time I was catering to people that were just. I was like, yeah, because these are the same people I hang out with. I was like, but what if a guy doesn't get girls on campus? What if a guy doesn't know what you're relating to? What was the guy kicking everything out? And I was like, yeah, I need to start talking about stuff. So then I was like, all right, let me talk about my internship. So once I started talking about my internship, people were like laughing, oh, what? This dude's a teacher? Wow, this is interesting. And then more got like, oh, man. I was like, this guy's like, dude, you should talk about that more. That's, wow, I like that stuff. And I was like, oh, man, what the F was I thinking? I was like, maybe I should talk about more movies. And that, after I got that appeal, I was just like, man. So I was just doing step shows and doing everything else, and I didn't like the way that my comedy came off. So I went up to New York. They're just like, dude, you talking about stuff. What the freak are you talking about? You're just young and stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, now I get it. But it took me a while to be like, yeah, I had the fun. I was funny, but I didn't know what type of funny to bring.
Right.
I was never like, I couldn't go to a comedy club with my act. Mm-hmm. Like BT, when he first booked me, he told me, he's like, don't ever say period juice on stage. Don't freaking say it. He says, you just dug yourself in a big hole and you pulled yourself out. But why are you saying it? You don't need to say it.
Right.
I was like, it's funny the way he, yeah. He's like, you don't curse at all, but that word is worse than the F word.
Than not cursing, yeah.
So that's the stuff I didn't learn because I wasn't around. Like, I'd say, like, Cam and Rio and all these people. I was like, you guys are coming up so great because you're at a comedy club and you're seeing comedy and people that know comedy can help. I was like, I was at college. How can I relate to someone that's been doing stand-up the same amount of time I'm doing and could give me advice about something else?
So, and being young like that, you don't always take that advice either. People are trying to give you advice, but you're not always willing to listen
to it.
Right,
because you're like, yeah, I was like, I think I'm funnier than him. What does he know about stand-up? We're all at the same pace. It's like playing football, but there's no coach there.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's just hitting each other, but no one knows how to formally do a tackle. No one knows anything else because you're just like, I'm on the field. So then when I got structured, I realized, oh, this is what stand-up is. And I start studying Chris Rock because I understand. I was watching Chris, why does Chris Rock seem so uninterested doing this when all these comedians just talk about the Def Jam days? Then I was looking at Chris Rock, and then I start studying Chris Rock, and I was like, holy F. My God, this is what stand-up is. This is what it is. This is being who you are, relating, and just talking about something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, I can't. I was like, my mother can't watch this show, what I'm talking about.
Has she seen it now?
I mean, she has stuff on YouTube. She came to one show one time. But my mom, she doesn't know. They're ministers. They don't like hearing people curse a lot. And I was like, look, I'm going up front, but the people behind me are going to be really filthy. So it was like, her name was Jen Cobra. She was like, she wasn't that dirty, but she was just like cursing and stuff like that. But now my parents are really supportive of it. They understand now. They realize this is what I want to do. And I blame my dad because I remember when we were young, we would sit at the house and watch Sanford and Son all the time. So it'd be me, him, and my brother. We'd bust out laughing. My grandfather watched Sanford and Son. And then when DVD players came out, he bought the whole cassette of Sanford. Like every year, like a season would come out. And we watched the whole season together. And then I would download on Napster all of Red Fox's albums. And I was like, man, I would just tell his jokes at school and everything else. And I was like, oh, and then I would Google everyone else. I was Google, but I was studying. I was like, everyone kept saying, Richard Pryor, Richard Pryor, Richard Pryor, Richard Pryor. I was like, the guy from The Wizard of Oz? I was like, this is the guy that's the greatest of all time? And everyone was like, Richard Pryor. So when I started looking at him, I downloaded his whole discography. Pretty much all like a legal bootleg, and shout out to that. But I listened to that, and I was like, wow. This is what, like, so I was studying that in college, and I was like that. So like after like a year in, I was like, all right, now I get it.
See, that's important, too, that it's not legal. I know that downloading is bad.
Right.
But it also made comedy accessible to so many more people than, I mean, music's music, you go buy CDs, but the internet kind of brought the comedy world to so many people.
Right.
Because you didn't have to go to the club. You could go on YouTube and check out some, and then it's got suggested videos. Oh, I wonder what this guy's like, what this person's like.
YouTube came out in 2006, I think so. 2006, 2005. I remember I was in high school when it happened. And this kid, I was like, what are you on? And he was just watching Cam'ron rap the whole time. He goes, you can type in anything and it'll pop up. I was like, anything? And I was just write, Red Fox, da-da-da-da. And I was just, ever since I was young, I just always knew I wanted to do comedy, but I just didn't know how to get to the stage.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just like, every time I had a chance, like I get a scholarship and I would write a funny stand-up routine. Because I was like, oh, there goes a crowd. I'm going to do this. Like, you have to do like a 5-minute speech after you get the scholarship.
Hey, you want to stick around for more time?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do your social media, and we'll go over to the web extra content.
Yeah.
Your website or whatever you got there.
Dutch Blackfoot, Instagram, Twitter. Jared Waters on Facebook. Squarespace Jared Waters is the website.
You got to get a web address, man. It's like $15 for a year.
It's a web address. It is. I just don't know it right now.
All right, Jerry, we're going to head over to the HMB sides, so check out hmbradio.com. Subscribe to the podcast so you can keep up with these things. Check out the Jazz Show coming up next on Radio St. Pete, followed by the Indie Circuit. Leave a message, voicemail, text message for us, 813-693-2124. You can follow me on Twitter at home_made_man. facebook.com/HMB Radio. And we're going to head over to web exclusive content. So check that out, podcast, and at HMBRadio.com. Jared, thank you for coming in, man.
You're welcome. You're welcome, world. All of you guys are welcome.
See you at the extra time.
Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more. Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.